One, two, three, four, just another day at my dead-end profession. I'm living day to day, yeah, listening to some good old country records on the radio. And yeah, what else can I say?
Hello, and welcome to the Degenerate
Podcast.
Sans Ryan, we can say whatever we want, and he can't stop us, Dave.
As long as you guys don't tell on us.
Yeah. We're actually in the what's the skeletal bones of what will be our new studio here. Yeah, you'll probably hear some echoes because we haven't gotten all the acoustic tiling up. But it's coming together pretty nice, huh?
I love that you're the only one that ever criticizes our sound.
Yeah.
Like, you guys, the sound is really terrible. And then the listeners don't say anything.
Yeah, nobody but me notices.
Yeah.
Yeah, indeed, we're going to be in a new studio where we're actually going to be able to record on the reg and have some halfway decent sound. Ryan is on tour right now in the bustling South Dakota metropolis, in Sioux City or something.
Yeah, yeah, go visiting all the degenerates out there. So if you're in that area, go check him out. His tour dates are on his Facebook page.
He's going to come back. He's actually going to be on the second part of this episode. He's going to record his own portion of this episode with the comedian he's on tour with, a guy who used to be down here in San Diego, Dan Bublitz. They're on tour right now up there, and he's going to record a little portion and have me edit it in. So
a bunch of scoundrels, I tell you.
I think I'm just going to put like a bunch of like Ryan edited N-words in there. I have some like really preciously saved audio clips. So I'm just going to
Saving for this very purpose.
Yeah, I'm going to put them interspersed throughout. Dave, how was Halloween?
I really didn't do anything. It was like the first year in a long time that I just wasn't feeling it. I don't give a shit.
I took my son out trick-or-treating.
Of course.
He's 17 months old.
Yeah.
And he had the cutest little dinosaur outfit. It was awesome.
What kind of dinosaur?
It was actually a dinosaur skeleton, and my wife went as a paleontologist.
Oh, you're such nerds. I knew you were going to nerd this up somehow.
I know. So we went out, and we went to the first ever house he's ever trick-or-treated at, and it was great. He walked up. I talked to the guy. Hey, is it okay if I take a picture? It's his first time ever. Yeah, sure. And it was great. It's super Norman Rockwell painting of a family moment.
Oh, my God. Fucking parents. I swear to God. You guys take pictures of every single moment.
That's right.
I see monthly pictures of babies. Oh, 3 months, 4 months.
Yep.
Like, that when that should have happened is 100 years ago when babies didn't live that long. When you had a litter of children.
Same amount of pictures over their lifespan.
Yeah, and so it was a momentous event. Like, oh my God, he made 4 months. Take a picture.
Yeah. All right. No, well, this was the first trick-or-treating, and they were like, all right. And as we're walking away, my wife goes, okay, look, there'll be a second house. Look, it looks like there's a nice old man sitting out on his porch waiting to give out some candy. Let's go over there. So we're like, okay, we go. And it was one of the ones where his front yard is like an elevated courtyard. So you have to, from the street, hike up like a dozen steps to get to this courtyard, and then another 6 steps to get to his front porch. And so my son...
So he's like up above the riffraff.
Exactly. Like, and my son, who's 17 months old, you know, takes a long time getting up the steps, gets into the courtyard, then starts walking the entire time. We're kind of chatting with the dude who's in an... He's like a 60-year-old man dressed in a Boy Scout uniform.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, right? Well, we get up there, and my wife is right next to him. I'm just kind of hanging out in the little courtyard. My wife is right next to my son as he's takes his little bucket up to get candy. And
was it the classic orange pumpkin bucket?
No.
You
little,
son of a bitch.
I know. And the guy was like... Out of nowhere, like his third sentence, he's like, oh, hey, how are you? Here, take a candy. And he's like, you should join the Boy Scouts, but make sure he's old enough to avoid pedophiles. And we're like, wait.
He actually said that?
Yeah, and we're like, what? And he's like, but don't worry. They don't have a lot of those. They're like the Mormons. They filter them out very well. And we're like, what the fuck is going on?
So many questions about
those statements
he made. First of all, is there an age that boys reach? We're like, oh, now I can avoid pedophiles.
Now it's your fault.
I'm 11. I made it.
Yeah. Well, there was that, and then he mentioned pedophiles another time. He's like, yeah, you just got to stay away from those pedophiles. And I'm looking at this 70-year-old man in a Boy Scout uniform, and I'm like, I'm suddenly so uncomfortable with you being around
like,
my son right now.
We failed our first test just now.
Yeah, this is the second house we've ever trick-or-treated at, and he's never trick-or-treating again. That is for goddamn sure, you creepy-ass old scout.
Oh, my God.
And he kept talking, and here's the problem. Because my son had to walk up like 12 steps to get to the courtyard and then 6 more steps to get to him, at the point that he mentioned the word pedophile, we are a good 2.5-minute trip back down to get to the street, the entire time which he is talking.
Right.
And so my wife kind of grabs him. He's like, okay, haha, let's go. And we go down. And the entire time, he just keeps getting weirder and weirder. He's talking about metaphysical bullshit, some philosophy, something.
Wait, I'm out of candy. Step into my van with me real quick. We'll get you some more.
I immediately like Google the Megan's Law website. And I'm like, how's he not on here? How is this possible?
Because he's elevated. He beat the system.
He can see him coming from a mile away. You're not reporting me. Yeah, it was really weird where you realize every once in a while I just turn to my wife and I'm like, sometimes I just forget to factor in crazy, right? Sometimes you're like, why is this person being an asshole? This person's being weird. Sometimes you just got to factor in crazy.
That's a little beyond crazy. Yeah. That's so weird. That, oh my God.
Watch out for them pedophiles, guys.
Holy shit.
Well, hopefully Ryan's avoiding the pedophiles up in the Dakotas and not getting,
I think he's old enough to avoid them.
I don't know yet. Let's see. Maybe is he a Mormon or a Boy Scout? Because those are the only two ones that seem to get it right.
Dude, I feel like, you know what I'm talking about. There's that trope where like you say like, oh, avoid this thing when you are that thing.
Yes.
Like, oh, hey, watch out for these. Like,
yeah, absolutely. It's the social justice warrior.
Yes.
Like, get away from those male rapists.
Yeah.
You realize you're like, hey, why do you keep going after drunk chicks?
So you reported that house to Megan's Law, right?
<You're> like, no, I put it on my vigilante justice list.
Keeping an eye on him.
All right, guys. So we will be coming back next week with all the degenerates in studio for our first ever Degenerates in Studio show. But for now, why don't you take a listen to what's going on with Ryan and Dan Bublitz up in the northern Midwest.
On the road.
Hey, guys. This is Ryan. As Bobby and Dave just mentioned a second ago from California, I'm on tour. Right now, I'm in Moline, Illinois, on my way to Springfield, Illinois, with my good buddy Dan Bublitz Jr.
Hello, everybody.
He is joining me in the motel room now for a quick mobile podcast. So a few things before we... I wanted to interview Dan here because I've never had him on the show, and this is the perfect opportunity, too.
I don't mean to be that guy, but I got to fact check you. I've actually been on the show.
Oh, back when Brett was the co-host.
Yes.
Right.
With the other crew. With
the dark days, man.
It's been a while, God. So yeah. I can see why it was where you would forget.
That almost seems like it was a whole different podcast, but it was the same in name only. So a few things is I flew to the Midwest on a bargain bin airline, which I will never fucking do again. Dan, I don't know if you ever had this problem where you price compare flights.
Oh, all the time.
You, of course, choose the cheapest one because we're trying to keep all our money here.
Yep.
We're doing a tour here.
Exactly.
Then you realize that they charge you for every step you take in the process. I'm looking at you, Spirit Airlines, but that's not even the one I flew. Like seriously, everything from like a soda to just, you know, checking your bag to bringing on a carry-on. I'm surprised there's not like a security clearance fee, but this one was the worst because I said this on my Facebook. This is the first time ever where the price of a ticket did not include a seat on the plane.
I don't see how that's even possible. I mean, isn't that what the plane ticket is?
That's what I assumed.
Like, isn't that when you buy a plane ticket, I automatically, it doesn't matter who I'm buying a plane ticket from, it doesn't matter what airline, when I buy a ticket, I automatically assume that that's all I need to get on that plane.
Right.
So, like, if I didn't bring any luggage and I didn't bring anything with me,
yeah,
all I have to do is show up, slam that fucking thing on the counter, and be like, all right, let's fly.
Meat and potatoes, man. Yes, absolutely.
It's that easy.
So I got an email the night before my flight left, and it was like, you got to check in online. I'm like, that's no problem. And they're like, you need to choose a seat. This is assigned seating. I'm like, all right. And then everywhere on that little seating grid had a price tag attached to it.
Oh, I don't think you necessarily had to choose.
There was no $0.
Some airlines make that as an option where you can choose your seat, but then they do charge you for it.
Oh, that's fucking bullshit, because they made me understand that there was no way to check in without pressing one of those buttons. It was very misleading, to say the very least.
I bet you, yeah, that's bullshit.
Still,
I mean, maybe they do require it on that one. I don't know, but I do know there are airlines that I've flown like that where I bought it. They're like, oh, go ahead and check in. Which seat would you like?
Yeah.
And then it's like another, and I'm like, whatever seat's available.
It's just there's so many loopholes in pricing that where people get around false advertisement laws. Like,
oh, absolutely.
It's unconscionable. Like, here's my favorite one. You ever had a resort fee at a fucking hotel? This has happened to me numerous times where I'll book a hotel and it'll say, all right, it's $200 a night. Fine. And then I get a check out like, all right, that'll be $300. I'm like, you said $200. Right, plus a resort fee. I'm like, what is the resort fee? Well, it's the privilege of being here. I'm like, that's what the room should cost. Is there any way that I can't pay that? No. Well, then that's part of the price. You can't just advertise one price and then say, oh, I forgot about the we exist fee. It's called a bait and switch, and it's illegal.
Oh, absolutely. It's kind of like here when we checked into this hotel, you had to like, because they were very confusing with it.
They were.
You know, the price of this room was supposed to be like $73 and some change. And then they're like, well, we're going to charge your card $173. Yeah. And then you're like, what? The room's $100? Well, no, we're actually only going to charge you $73, but we got to put another hold for $100. And you're like, oh, so you're going to hold $100, and then in the morning I get $25 back. And they're like, no. It's the whole $173. And you're, but it was
so
very
concerning. So you're going to charge my card $173? No. It was like a fucking Abbott and Costello sketch at that
really
desk.
It was.
So anyway, that's what we've been going through here. It was 2 days ago. We were killing some time in Huron, South Dakota, and I decided to see a movie, and there's a little theater there, and Dan looks up the movies for me. There's only like four showing, and there's a movie called Gostel. I never heard of it. I never heard of the case. Dan's a big true crime fan, so he had heard of this guy, but I never had. And so evidently, I had to look up the synopsis before I saw it, because the other two movies, one was The Nutcracker, no thanks, and the other one was Halloween, which I just saw. So I'm like, all right, I'll see this Gostel movie. And it's about that doctor who was convicted of killing babies after they were born alive, right? And so, and he was quote unquote an abortion doctor, but he was much more than that. It was that case had nothing to do with abortion.
Well, and if it's the case that I remember correctly, not only that, his whole office was super filthy.
Oh,
and,
it
like,
was
super,
gross,
like,
man.
It was way
cats running around.
Yeah, it
he
was
would
like,
just put
it was
the
like,
fetuses in like garbage bags and throw them on the floor.
Basically, yeah, yep,
yeah. It was nuts. But anyways, as you can imagine, though, the movie was very heavy-handed with, you know, some pro-life rhetoric. And it just was. That's not what the case was about, but the movie definitely, whoever had a hand in it was like, well, as long as we're making this movie, I can get my point across. So I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, I got very paranoid because I'm like, oh, shit. I'm in a small town in the Midwest. I've never heard of this movie. I've never heard of this guy. Am I in one of those, like, Kirk Cameron-produced religious propaganda movies that only air in the South and the Midwest that, like, somehow make $7 million against a $1 million budget? Like, am I in one of those? So the whole time, I'm like, oh, fuck, I think I'm being brainwashed here. I was freaked out the whole movie. I'm like, well, Dean Cain's in it, but he might be a nut. I don't know anything about the gentleman.
I'm sorry, California. I'm going to apologize in advance that you're very liberal. Ryan Shores came to the Midwest and he hung out with me, and he's going to come back conservative and pro-life.
I got me a black and white flag with a blue line through it.
I mean, we did do a fundraiser the other day where one of the main items that they were doing, and we were doing a raffle for the fundraiser, was for a rifle. So.
That was fucking terrible. Okay, so everyone in Huron was awesome. I love that show. It's been my favorite show so far. But when I walked in, yes, they were raffling off a fucking assault rifle. I'm like, can we just, like, I don't know, pick the winner now before the comedy show so I can just make sure not to piss off that guy? There's never been such high stakes as a weapon being having access to. I'm like, I just want to make sure that all the jokes are okay with whoever goes home with the assault rifle.
Everybody else, I could care less if you like me.
truthfully.
However, most of them people probably have guns in their trunk.
Right.
So
be hysterical, just like, so anyway, guys, President Trump right here. Never mind.
Yeah, right. It'd be like one of those cartoon things where it's like a cut of you. You're doing the joke, and you're like, so Trump! And then you hear the sound effect, and then it's like a fast cut to the audience, and they're all holding weapons.
Sorry, so Dan, now you were born and raised in South Dakota,
that's
right?
That's correct.
Then you came out to San Diego for a while.
Yep.
Now, did you start stand-up? I met you as a stand-up in San Diego. Mm-hmm. Did you start stand-up in South Dakota or when you came out to California?
I started in South Dakota.
All right.
I did.
Now, what is the scene like here in the Midwest, or more specifically in your town of South Dakota?
Well, in my town of South Dakota, I am the comedy scene.
Yeah, it's just
one-man
show.
There's a couple people that do comedy now there, too, but they're at the open mic level. I mean,
right.
That's where they're at.
But then they're gonna
we don't
stay
really
there.
Like, in a lot of big cities, you know, like L.A., Minneapolis, San Diego, the host city has, like, their scene or whatever. Well, because South Dakota, most of the cities are small. Our host state is our scene.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like that's,
yeah.
And so South Dakota as a state has a really good scene. I mean,
yeah.
Sioux Falls is the biggest city, and there's a great comedy club. Boss's Comedy Club is there. And we've got a great handful of comedians that live in South Dakota, or live in, just in Sioux Falls specifically. But we have a lot of touring headliners that live in South Dakota. A good example of of that, who popped in and did a guest spot on our show,
right.
Timmy Williams from The Whitest Kids You Know. Yeah. He lives in Watertown, South Dakota.
That's crazy.
That's where he was born and raised, and now he's back there living because he has a kid and he wants to raise her in the Midwest. And
yeah,
you know, it's a great place for raising families. So he lives there. And then there's Spencer Dobson's another touring headliner that lives in Aberdeen. And then there's some guys that live out on the west side of the state in Rapid City, and there's a club out there. So we've got a great scene, and now we've got the comedy festival.
What's great about this is in difference to the places that I've toured to before, which is on either side of the either coast, is that I feel like the audiences really appreciate live entertainment out here because it's so rare. You know, I don't feel like people get just the constant barrage of come to my show that they do in, say, California or New York.
Oh, you know, absolutely. I mean? Because, you know, I got here, you know, I don't do shows. You can't go find a comedy show every day of the week.
Right.
I mean, you could maybe in the whole state, but not like in the same area of the
state. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, we're not doing, we're like in Huron where I live, I'm not doing shows every week.
Right.
You know, I'm not bringing comics in every week. I do like an open mic monthly there. And then every couple of months I'll bring in to bring in some touring comics or whatever. And the shows always pack out because it's like you said, it's not a lot of other entertainment going on. So when it does come through, people want to go and
yeah.
people appreciate it. And that's something I've noticed even just touring, you know, when you, a lot of the better shows end up being in smaller towns because
right.
the whole town pretty much comes to the show. And because they don't get this kind of entertainment on a regular basis, they come to have a good time, and then they do have a good time.
And, you know, I misjudged people in Huron. You misjudged them in Watertown because I saw some older folks at each show, and I was like, oh, no, they're going to hate us. And they were surprisingly receptive to everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
That, like, that couple in Watertown sitting front row, they looked 106 years old.
They did.
And like me and Dan were like, oh, man, we're going to ruin this poor old lady's night. She's expecting Alan King, and like she's wanting Dan to get up there with like a straw hat and arm guard. I was like, boy, I'll tell you what, it's Dan Vaudeville.
Yeah, exactly.
That's who she's expecting. And then I come up with all my potty mouth.
Yep,
but
yep.
No, they were surprisingly receptive too. That was crazy.
That was great. A little old lady even came up and bought my drinking game after the show.
The old lady?
Not the old lady. There was another older lady.
Oh, okay.
Though. Like, not.
I'm going to get wasted.
Yeah, I was like, what?
You're I'm going to do kung fu and yoga poses and take motherfucking shots. That's
hey,
great.
Whatever it takes to get healthy.
I love your merch, by the way. So Dan has a very interesting. So most comics have very standard merch, T-shirts, shot glass, and their stupid comedy album no one cares about. So, but Dan is selling this fucking drinking game. Dan, tell him about it.
Yeah, so I created my own drinking game called Drunk Fu Master, which is it's a dice game, so it's really easy. And the cool thing about the game is that I make it myself. So it's like a hobby. It gives me something to do when I have some downtime. And then if I'm on the road and I run out of merch, all I need to do is find a Hobby Lobby, and I can get some supplies, and then I can go and get, you know, make some more merch. And
ooh, easier said than done out here, man. There's fucking nothing for miles sometimes.
Well, yes, this is true. That's why you take advantage of where there is stuff.
Yeah, that's the thing about being on the road, man. I tell people you got to be like a seagull. You have to take advantage of little things wherever you can. Food, sleep. If you have an hour to snooze for just even 45 minutes, you take that because you might go stretches without sleep or food for a while.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I was over at the little shitty continental breakfast here at the hotel. I'm like, I'm not hungry, but I'm gonna put down a wild. A bowl of Fruit Loops and some of these runny eggs.
Oh, I did the same thing. Like I it was funny because I ate some eggs and sausage, and I was like, well, I'm kind of full. Nope, I need to fill up.
You gotta be like a bear.
Waffle. I had a waffle, had a couple of yogurts. I was like, this is gonna last for a while.
Yeah, I could be trapped in a car without food for a very long time.
Yeah, exactly.
And if your tour partner doesn't want to eat when you want to eat, you know, sometimes one of you is out of luck.
So, yeah, true story.
Yeah. So, anyways,
but yeah, so I got this game, and like I said, I make it myself, which is cool. Also, even though the game is each set is essentially the same, it's a little bit different because I can't 100% reciprocate every die. You know what I mean? So, like, you know, I don't have, like, I don't have it automated to where it's just not, you know, yeah. it's not manufactured. I do it myself. But it's a cool little game where basically you just roll two dice. One die has different poses. It's a combination of kung fu poses and yoga poses. And the whole, and then the other die has the amount of shots that you'll take. And the object of the game is that whatever action the die says, you do that action for 30 seconds. If you can't hold the pose for 30 seconds, you take those shots.
And don't some bars buy it and like play that game after your show with the customers?
They have, which was
that
really
is
cool.
Genius.
I did a brewery about a month and a half ago, and the guys that owned the brewing company bought it, and they were like, "We want to play this tonight." Oh, and they awesome. Bought it and played it, and it was cool because then I had posted a picture of that I was getting ready for another show down in Lincoln, and they commented on the picture of the die. They're like, "This game is amazing," which is cool. So it's a simple game, and then the object is you just go around and play until you all get drunk and have a good time. So
now, what do you anticipate? Because we have how many more? Like five more shows? Four more shows?
Well, what is it? Yeah, we have Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Four more shows.
Four more shows.
I have five. You have
you
four.
You have five. Okay, yeah, so yeah, what do you expect will be the hardest part moving forward with the rest of this tour?
For me, finding time to do my homework. Because that's the other thing, when you're on tour, you're especially tours like this, when you got a show every day, it's pretty much do the show, sleep, get up, drive,
right,
and repeat. That's pretty much it. So it's hard to find time to like do other things. You
do
know?
You typically pair up like we're doing now, or most of your tours do you work it alone?
Typically, it depends on what I'm touring. I mean, most of my
tours. It's a one-nighter, probably just yourself, but I mean longer
tours.
No,
but what I mean by that is, like, you know, I toured my one-man show a little bit. I didn't go with anybody on that.
Right.
I just, you know, toured it myself. But, like, when I do stuff like this where I'm doing, like, a string of shows, like, we're on tour for this whole week, I typically pair up with somebody.
Yeah, dude.
Because you can split expenses. Because it's hard, especially on these do-it-yourself tours like this. You know, there's so many things that a lot of comics they don't think about. They're just like, "Oh, I need to put on a tour. Let's go on tour." And it's not that easy.
No.
You have no idea, like, how hard it is, you know, to make contacts and set up shit with venues and hope that they fulfill their end of the obligations and vice versa.
It's tough when you're...
And you don't know, especially when because you end up going to areas that you don't necessarily know anybody. You don't know. Like this is a good example. Last night, the crowd that was there, they were a fun crowd, but it was a small crowd. You and I, we're not a draw right now, especially in places where, you know.
Not in Moline, Illinois, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's one of them things. We don't have tons of credits like other comics, you know.
Yeah.
There's plenty of comics that could have came here and totally pulled.
Sure.
But, and that's just a part of the industry. So when you're doing these tours like that, you don't know what you're going
to
get.
Well, that's the thing is when you don't have pre-access to the venue before, you know, doing these do-it-yourself tours, is that my problem has always been I get to the venue. I'm like, "Hey, is Kevin here?" "Nah, Kevin's not coming in tonight." Like, I'm like, "Well, I'm the comedy. Nobody told me about a comedy show."
Oh, like, yeah, absolutely.
Like, can we turn these TVs off? I'm not sure I'm supposed to turn off the TVs. Like, can I talk to Kevin? Well, I'll call him. He's not answering. You know, so.
Oh, yeah,
there's
absolutely.
Shit like that will always happen.
Oh, it does, yeah.
Money? No one told me about giving you money for my register.
What are you talking about?
Mr.
You got a gun? Is this a robbery?
Yeah. Well, I get it. You one of them libtards that wants handouts.
Oh, I see how this is. Welcome to the Midwest.
Yeah, yeah. So luckily that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, exactly. But you don't know what you're going to get. That's why when I do these tours, it is better to go with somebody because you can split the expenses.
Well, for me, it's not just splitting the expenses, although that is a huge part of how I turn a profit. But when I travel alone, after like date number three, I get cabin fever, man. Even though I'm around people, you know, you're not talking to these people. You know, it's a very lonely thing. And I start to, like, you know, feel like buying a volleyball and putting a bloody handprint on and talking to it. So, but it's not just the loneliness of it, but it's like in situations like we just described, you have someone to have your back in situations like that.
Oh,
you know?
Absolutely.
Because, if a promoter's screwing you over, when you're alone, you're like, "Am I crazy? Am I the asshole? Maybe I'm wrong here." But, like, if you have a road companion, then you can be like, no, this is bullshit. You owe us this money, you know?
No, exactly.
Stuff like that. Yeah. So that's always good.
It is.
And
it also makes the driving better.
Oh, God, yes, it does.
You can split up the driving a little bit, but also not just for that, just you have company.
Yeah.
Which, you can bullshit or whatever, and it makes these long drives a lot better.
Yeah,
like absolutely. Yesterday, we drove 8 hours.
Oof.
That was like we did a whole full days of work just of driving,
just to get to work,
just to get to work. Yes,
yeah. My commute to work was 8 hours yesterday, so I don't want to hear it, LA.
So, but yeah, that, you know, when you're on the road alone, that's shit super boring.
Yeah. Now, you have a show called, a podcast called The Art of Bombing.
That's correct.
Yes, you were. I made sure to post that one because I had a lot of fun on that show. So you interview comics about their worst show, but no one ever interviews you about your worst bombing, and I would like to do that right now.
Oh, God. Well, I have
the worst show you had in recent memory or any memory.
Well, let me see. God, I've gotten to the point now that I've been doing that podcast more that I don't let them get to me as much. I'm just like, that was a learning experience
because
it's changed my perspective. But, I mean, really, the one, and I have talked about it before, but it's the one that started that podcast, which it's funny because – so I did this show a few years ago. I got booked to do a corporate event for the South Dakota State Emergency Medical Service Conference.
Right.
And so it's like it's a weekend event where they get a bunch of the EMTs and EMS people get together. They have – classes and they have workshops and they have speakers and they have dinners and awards and all these kind of things, and then sometimes they do entertainment. And so my aunt and uncle were on the planning committee. They asked, what, you know, hey, would you be interested in doing this, blah blah blah, and I gave them a quote. They accepted it, so I got this gig, and then I went to this gig and things kind of got changed. Like, I was supposed to perform during the dinner, which would have been fine.
Yeah.
But then they decided that they wanted to wait. They wanted to do their awards during the dinner and then have me do comedy after the dinner. So that was kind of like, well, all right. Maybe that's better. Then people won't be eating.
Yeah.
All right. We'll go. It's your thing. I'm here for you. You're paying me. I'll.
When there's a big paycheck on the line, I don't give a shit. I'm just like, you can throw shit at me and I'll dance.
Exactly. So the people are sitting through this long-ass dinner. Well, now they get to the end of their little awards ceremony, and it's important that everybody knows that the two guys that were hosting it were part of the EMS or whatever, but they've been hosting this event for a long time, and they go back and forth. And the one guy was just doing, like, Scandinavian jokes, you know, the Ola, Ola and...
Scandinavian joke. I am not familiar with Scandinavian. You said that to me like I'm supposed to be like, oh yeah, Scandinavian
joke.
Okay. Sure.
So it's like Midwestern jokes. So it's like Oli and I fucking can't even think of it. It frustrates
me
so bad.
Is it integral to the story?
It's like Pollock jokes, basically.
Okay, got it.
That's essentially what
Yikes.
It is.
Continue.
Okay, so he's doing these. Of course, they're killing because it's in the Midwest or whatever. But anyway, so the last
low-hanging fruit plays
the last award that they're going to give away is for the EMT of the Year award.
Okay.
Big award, right? Well, the particular person that they were going to give it to had just passed away like a few weeks prior. After a long battle of cancer.
I see where this is going.
After a long battle of cancer.
Ooh.
So then they do this big they show a video.
Oh, not a video. Did they have a sad song scoring it?
Well, no. They just showed a video of his friends and family together when he was still alive reading the nomination letter to him.
Oh.
So...
Cringe.
They have this.
I just
big,
get
now,
the pee shivers.
Oh yeah, dude. So this guy, he is a total community hero. He's like a Boy Scout leader. He's like a deacon in the church. He's a teacher. He's on the fire squad. He's on ambulance. He's like everything in his community. He is like the absolute epitome of fucking hero.
Yeah.
Right. He is a saint.
Right.
And so then there's lots of waterworks, and just after that video, big standing ovation
for that.
Oh, okay. Well, then they cool that down, and then they're going to present the award, and his widow is there to accept the award.
This just keeps getting worse.
They present the award to her, and then Another standing ovation.
Of course.
So that's two standing ovations. That they get done with that. Then they're going to close out the award ceremony. They have this ceremony called the place setting, the last rites place setting. And what they do is it's like a place setting where they put hats and like basically it's a representation of the falling, you know, police, firemen, ambulance, that kind of thing. So they do the closing with that where they come in and they do a little – little ceremony thing, and then that closes out the awards thing. So that's pretty, you know, deep too.
Yeah.
So you have all this stuff, pretty emotional. And then they don't really, they're like, okay, well, whenever you're ready, you can go up there. And I was like, well, aren't you going to introduce me? And he's like, well, I guess I can. One of the hosts says this to me. He's like, well, okay. He's like, all right, guys, here's your comedian.
Oh, no.
Dan.
that was your intro?
That's pretty much the intro.
Dan's here.
Yep. So I grab the microphone and I go up there and I'm like, well, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
I was like, that was pretty amazing. How about a round of applause for that? Yeah. Got to follow two standing ovations. I'm not going to be able to. I was like, I'm that.
So anyway, what the hell's the deal I'm with dead gonna, EMTs, right, guys?
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. And then what happened? And then. As I'm trying to get going, get my pacing going, people are getting up. Some are leaving, and I get they've been there for 3 hours. They're tired. Some people are getting up to go talk to this widow, and yeah. She's sitting at the front table.
You can't very well tell them to please shut the fuck up.
Yeah, exactly. I cannot tell them to shut up.
You can't even make a playful joke about it.
No, no.
You just leave it alone.
Have to ignore it and try to power through. And I did. I powered through my hour, and it was a struggle. I had a lot of ups and downs. Some of the funnier things happened when I was like, I kind of went off the rails. And there was one point where I made a joke about, you know, I was like, well, geez, if I have a heart attack or a stroke, I'm in the perfect place since you guys are all EMTs. I feel like this is the best place to have a heart attack. And then I was like, but I don't know with how this set's going. You might just let me die. And then that got a big laugh, but. Anyway, so I get done.
You're pretty brave talking about dying right after that fucking video.
Right. I get done, and I'm sitting at I go up to the lady, and she says, all right, I'll be right back with your check. I'm sitting at this table, and the old man, one of the old guys that was the host, comes up to me, and he says, keep at it, kid. You'll get there.
Shut the fuck up.
And he was the guy that was doing all these Ola and Lena jokes.
Yeah,
which are these.
So he was giving you a there pep talk.
Yeah.
Someday you'll be at my level telling hacky street jokes I printed off the internet.
That's basically what I got out of it. So,
that's
the one that sticks with me the most. But now, so I have another podcast that I do. It's a bonus podcast to the Art of Bombing. That's it's available for. Through my Patreon. It's a subscription-based podcast called The Breakdown, and what I'm doing is I'm taking some of my old sets where I bombed, and I'm breaking them down. I'm listening back to them and then talking about things that I could have did better and, you know, analyzing these sets.
Uh-huh.
Well, right now I'm doing a big, because I typically keep them to, like, 20, 25 minutes each one, and it's, like, monthly, but I'm breaking down that set right now. Like, I'm in a 3 or 4 part.
Oh, man,
series,
there's something for you. There's nothing you can do, though, man.
But
what could you have done?
This is the greatest part about this, is that now that this happened like 3 years ago, and as I'm listening to this and I'm analyzing it, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was.
Really?
I was just that hard on myself.
Oh, man, no.
Like, I can hear the laughter. Like, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the situation, a lot of elements that made it difficult, but it wasn't nearly as bad as I felt.
So, okay, I guess if I was in your position, the only thing I would have changed was I would have, like, gestured towards the widow and been like, so you're saying you're single? So, that would have gone over great.
Yeah, right. It might have. Maybe that was the play I should have made.
For our audience that may ever have the awkward unpleasantness of sitting through a bad comedian, or maybe not even a bad comedian, just a comedian's bad set, what can you say to a comic afterwards that won't just piss us off? Because I was just thinking about that when people come up to me like, hey, man, keep at it. I'm like, get the fuck away from me. Or, it wasn't that bad. Get the fuck away from me.
I just was like, I'm getting paid. I'm getting paid.
No, I'm saying what can audience members...
Oh, what can they say to us? Don't say anything.
Yeah, don't...
Just don't even approach us.
Yeah, if you see a comic guy on stage, don't make eye contact. They don't want eye contact with you. Don't make eye contact with us.
Yeah. I mean,
we know what just happened up there.
Yeah, we're very well aware of what happened up there.
So I'm going to wrap it up here because I want to take advantage of that shower one more time.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, you're not coming in there with me.
He's lying, ladies and gentlemen.
So yeah, the last thing we were talking about last night is we were talking about advice we give guys that are new to road work.
Mm-hmm.
And so we made some pretty decent dough the first two nights, but then last night, kind of slim. So I always tell newer guys, save the money you make Thursday through Sunday, because you're going to need it on for what you fucking take a bath on Monday through Wednesday shows. And they never listen to me, but that's okay, because Adam Sank told me the same thing on my first tour, and I did not listen to him. So we did two shows, Friday and Saturday, and like one in San Diego, one in Arizona. And I had made $100 each night. Now, to me at the time, that was the most money in the world, because I was only working at Party City and doing comedy for free, essentially. So this is the first time I was ever making money in stand-up. And my checks from Party City were like $325 every 2 weeks. So, and in my mind, I'm about to fucking make $500 in five nights. So I am like Conor McGregor these first two nights. I am Floyd Mayweather. I'm lighting bills on fire, throwing them over my shoulder. I'm buying everyone drinks. And Adam's like, dude, it's not, you may not make that. I'm like, of course you will. We made it with two for two, Friday and Saturday. By Wednesday, I was like, can I borrow $5? I would like to get a shitty gas station pizza, please. So anyway, if there's any aspiring comics that work the road, just because you make a lot of money one night, fucking save that shit. You might not make it the next one.
That's right. You need to be able to get home.
All right. I'm Dan. No, I'm Dan.
Oh, can I plug something?
Yeah.
Hey, I do have a one-man show that is available on Amazon Prime called It Was Supposed to Be a Love Story. Check that out, please.
Check it out. All right. I'm Ryan for Dan and kind of for Dave and Bobby back in California saying see you next week. Cruising with the Twos.
Ooh, yeah, time passing by. Oh, that time passes by. Oh, motherfucking time is passing by.